This is the first edition Thursday playbook, and we are so excited because we are following the requests of the wonderful listeners and followers that we have to put out more content, better content, trying to inspire and aspire to be better people, live to our higher selves, and I certainly appreciate everyone's requests. There's no better way to start Thursday edition of the playbook than at the Masters. And I sat down with David Abeles, the CEO of TaylorMade, the number one golf company in the world. And we talked about the eventual winner, Tiger Woods, and talking about comebacks, persistence, all the different things, the opinions of others, and most importantly, values, and how important it is to stick to your values, not only as an individual, but as a team and a company. And finally, he is living proof why you don't limit your point of entry if you want to be a CEO of a top business in America. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. We have the CEO and president of TaylorMade, David Abeles. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're at Augusta National. Hard not to be great, right?
Yeah, what an awesome week. Let's start. Not only are we at Augusta, but this is the first time I've ever been in a double-decker. What's the deal with this thing?
Well, we're actually upstairs. Obviously, there's two stories. We launched our new TaylorMade Tour truck 2 weeks ago at the World Golf Championships at Austin, Texas, which was incredible. It's the first of its kind. We built a double-decker tour truck. So we're actually on the top floor here in the conference room where we spend some time with great partners like yourself, Dave. And downstairs, right below us, is where our technicians work on the world's best players' golf clubs. So Tiger's clubs are being built downstairs, and Jason Day's clubs, and Dustin Johnson, and Rory McIlroy, Team TaylorMade, they're in and out of our truck at every tour stop, getting tuned up to make sure they have the new product, the latest and greatest technology, and that their specifications are dialed in precisely to what their needs are. And so this truck is actually really not only a statement of who we are as an organization, how we support the best players in the world, but it's a functional facility. It's a building that goes from tour event to take care of our team.
You know, a lot of people that are entrepreneurs want to build companies like TaylorMade.
Yeah.
And it's really a technology company. It really is. What's the biggest challenge of having the best technology? I know, for example, where I come from, the original phone business, you know, iPhone's biggest competitor is iPhone.
Yeah.
Right? What's your biggest challenge?
Yeah, you know, every year, obviously, we're bringing new and advanced technologies to market. And the mission of our company is actually very simple. I don't know if most golfers know this, but our mission is to be the best performance golf brand in the world. So when you think about breaking down those words, to be the best at something, you better really invest in that, because this is a highly competitive space, as are other businesses. But if you really want to be the best, performance doesn't lie, right? So you can't fake performance, which means you have to bring technology that advances performance year after year after year. We're only a golf company, and we have to do this worldwide. So when you think as an entrepreneur about how you put together a mission and how you think about how words define your actions and action define your outcome, it's critically important that you're very thoughtful. But at our core, we're an innovation-driven technology company in the golf space. And the biggest challenge you face is that when you choose the path of innovation, it's the riskiest path you can choose, because you got to be willing to put something out there that may succeed or may not succeed. And so a lot of companies talk about we're innovative. But innovation isn't a buzzword. It's actually a cultural belief, and it's built into the organization at every level of the organization, starting with our people, through our tour technicians, our research and developers, through our engineers, into our human resources function, and even out here on tour. So we have chosen a very difficult path, but I'm very proud of the work that we do. We have the best R&D team in the world. We have the best core of engineers that are building this new and advanced technology. We have an advanced research team that is bringing new technologies every day. And the best example of that right now is injected twist face in the M5 and M6 drivers, which has never been done before in golf. And for the first time, we have designed a driver past the legal limits and actually tuned every single driver head. David, we touch every single driver head in the world, tune them right back to the legal limit. So there is no variance in production from one that might not be as fast to the fastest one. They're all the same. So whatever Tiger's playing today or Rory's playing today is exactly what golfers can get. That's never been done before in golf.
Which I love about skiing and golf as I get older is that I always call it better golf through technology. Mm-hmm. So as I went from 10 years old when I moved to San Diego playing golf as much as I could to 51 years old, you know, I think my head speed is faster than you know, when I played football in college.
Yeah.
And the accuracy, you know, when you take the ball, the club, everything that TaylorMade does innovation-wise, it's incredible. Now, when I think of TaylorMade, I think of performance for sure. But, you know, it's also passion and integrity.
Yeah.
And, you know, integrity is important, as you talk about, to the legal limit. And I think there's a lot of knockoffs and other things in the sport that make it even more difficult to be the leader in innovation, because you're challenged by copycats, misinformation, and other things out there. In the level of integrity that you're at, how important is that through TaylorMade in all those different areas that you explained?
Yeah, David, I actually appreciate you recognizing that. You know, we've built a beautiful and a powerful global brand in our sport. But really at the core of what we do outside of our mission are these core values that our company subscribes to. And you use two really big words there. Passion is clearly runs through the veins of every TaylorMade employee in every market around the world. We do business obviously here in the United States. We have offices in the UK, in London. We have offices in Toronto, in Shanghai, in Tokyo, in Seoul. All over the world we do business. And the one common thread that connects this organization beyond the game of golf is the passion for the game of golf and the integrity in which we do our work. And so how we show up is equally as important as what we show up with. And so whether you're downstairs, I'm looking downstairs right now at Wade Lyles, who is the best technician in the world building golf clubs, or Keith Sabarba, who just walked off the truck, who is literally running across Washington Road right now to ensure that Tiger and Dustin Johnson are dialed in for the Masters. The way in which we conduct our business is of the highest integrity. We do not compromise our principles or our values. We ensure that every interaction we have, both internally as a group of people, whether you're with your colleagues or with your peer groups, or externally, whether it's with customers, with tour players, with members of the media, that we are as professional as we possibly can be. And we believe that. We believe that we stand for that symbol of excellence in golf. We take it very seriously. And I wouldn't have it any other way in my role in this organization. And we lead that way. So I appreciate recognizing that, because when someone from the outside says, boy, the way I view your company is a passionate group of people with high integrity that focuses on new innovation, if that was described by 50 million golfers around the world, which we serve, 50 million golfers that we incent and promote and try to inspire to buy our products, we're doing the right thing. So I appreciate that. It means a lot to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also from the top down as CEO and president to the 6 of the 12 best players in the world represent you.
Yeah.
And what makes it difficult when, and I deal with entrepreneurs all the time, they start with passion, then they move to a purpose, right? And then they think about profitability. What the most interesting thing about what you're able to do is have all that integrity, performance, passion, purpose, but you're actually a profitable company.
Yeah.
And there's always this conflict with people, whether they're trying to get a job in sports, following their passion or their love, or in an innovative business, where there's a difference between an innovator and a business person, right? I always use the McDonald's brothers as a classic example. Yeah. They're innovators. They created the best franchise system with the speedy service system.
Right.
But Ray Kroc, who we both know from San Diego, is a true entrepreneur, businessman. How does profit fit into what you do with those great values that you have?
Yeah, it's the intersection of creativity and profitability, or how you run a business. And one of the things I've always been inspired by through real great entrepreneurs is they think so broadly. They've got a great perspective on the future, or an idea that could change the future, or an idea that could change an industry. And those skills, those talents are so incredibly important. But the best entrepreneurs I've met are the ones that convert that perspective into something that ultimately is a winning formula from a financial standpoint in and around building a business, right? Because you can only exercise that vision and perspective if you're funded enough over time to be able to do it.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate because we've got great creativity, great innovative chops, passionate people, all the things we've talked about. But we run a very disciplined business as well, right? How we design and develop products. Not that just they work better or help golfers at every skill level play the game better, but how do we get those products commercialized to market, make enough margin in those products to be able to reinvest in the things that matter? So how do we reinvest in the next wave of innovation? Because entrepreneurship isn't a one-time thing, it's an all-the-time thing, and innovation is an all-the-time thing. So you can't just launch something really great, not make any money on it, and think you can do it again. So you have to figure out really a very comprehensive business plan to support the profit scenario in and around what you're doing to invest in the future of your company. And we do that very well. So we take a large percentage of our profitability on an annual basis, and we reinvest it into the company to ensure that not just in 2019, but in 20, 21, 22, I can sit across from you, Dave, and have the same conversation about injected twist face, you know, to Spider X, to TP5 and TP5X, to TP5 picks, and then what's going to come next year, right? And we have to not only bring that value to consumers, but we also have to create the value in the products and monetize that so we continue to succeed. What's interesting about this interview is it comes a week after we celebrated our 40th anniversary as a company. 40 years ago, we were founded by one of the greatest entrepreneurs in the game of golf. His name was Gary Adams.
Yeah.
In 1979.
Did he borrow against his house?
He borrowed money against his house. I have a great idea, and that's to convert Woodwoods, which you and I may remember.
Yeah, I remember.
I'm sure many of your audience does, to steel, essentially what we called metalwoods. And the term metalwood came from TaylorMade.
It's trademark,
a lofted metalwood.
Yeah.
Why? Because it was a better way to manufacture a product to enhance performance. It took him literally 15 years to convert the world. 15 years to convert the world from wood to metal. And here we are literally generations later with ultra thin cast titanium, multi-material technologies that has taken his innovative, really fabric, the way he thought, 4 decades later into something very special.
And changed the game of golf.
It changed the game of golf. And candidly, we exist to help golfers play better. The only way you're gonna do that is by bringing golfers something better in performance to move forward. So even though we're a big company, and I'm proud of that and also very humbled by it, we are a very entrepreneurial company. So the term entrepreneur and the term innovator, they're synonymous in many ways. You have to move forward. You have to be willing to take risks and do things differently if you want to advance. Otherwise, you're just like everybody else, and that's not TaylorMade.
No, and you know, there is that mitigated conflict between how much risk do I take? Because my biggest piece of advice to entrepreneurs, and I get asked it all the time, is stay in business.
Yeah.
Right. If you can stay in business, you can evolve if you're innovative. Now, one of the other things that may go unnoticed, and you know, maybe I'm too big of a fan to be doing an unbiased interview, but TaylorMade is always involved in philanthropic efforts. I know you sit on the board of First Tee. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that people don't see behind the scenes because the sport needs companies like TaylorMade to not only survive, but to innovate, just like you innovated the game with Metal Woods and all this new twist technology, you know, Tiger's new clubs coming out. Otherwise, there's innovative marketing things that you do that raise more money so that more kids, and it's not so TaylorMade can sell stuff 30 years from now.
Right.
It's literally so the golf game thrives, not just survives, but thrives. You know, where does the importance of the philanthropic stuff that TaylorMade fall into your economics?
Yeah, we feel a profound responsibility to advance the game of golf and ensure that generations to come are playing the game of golf. And our hope is that there will be more playing the game of golf in the future than there even are today. So one of the ways we do that is by bringing products that help golfers play better. So that's what we do as a business, which is, you know, how do we provide you a product that provides greater enjoyment to you and that you shoot better scores and that you get an opportunity to perform better? And as a net result, you want to come back and play more and maybe bring your friends or your children or whomever it is to help advance the game. But to your point again, I'm just going to come back to the concept of innovation, because while we innovate across every functional area of our business, not just in product, but in our marketing functions, we can talk about that at length, which is great. I mean, what we're doing right now with Ricky Fowler and TP5 picks that you're going to see this afternoon, Wednesday afternoon at Augusta National, is something just awesome. This van, we innovate in human resources, which is how we train and develop our people, which leads to stronger retention and a better environment. We innovate operationally in terms of what our supply base looks like. We innovate across everything we do. But the one thing that we're also very proud of is how we invest in the game and where we innovate from a philanthropic standpoint. And the First Tee's an example, an incredible institution that has enabled underprivileged kids to get education and really understand and learn the game of golf as a platform for their future. It's not just about playing golf, that's about their future, the next round of entrepreneurs, individuals, young kids that have the opportunity to build a platform through an educational process that's second to none and that leads them to better places. We also support our troops in a big way. We're very involved with Operation Game On in San Diego, which is the rehabilitation process for injured warriors coming back from the battlefield. We invest in that to make sure that's the case. We also invest in junior programs. So Rory McIlroy, who everybody knows, I'm sure everybody who reads your...
Immaculate kid.
Yeah, I mean, everybody Rory McIlroy, we launched a junior set of Rory McIlroy Kids Clubs. Here's the thing about profit. We don't profit at all on those. We take every margin dollar we make in those and put that back against junior golf in the form of the PGA Junior League with the PGA of America to help young kids get into the game of golf in a team atmosphere to get them ultimately to traditional golf over time. So we take it very seriously. And those are just a few examples of the things that we do. We do things on a global basis as well. But we try to be very thoughtful and make sure that any invested dollar has a meaningful impact. Right? It's one thing to say, hey, I donated some money to something, and so that's my cause. If we're going to invest philanthropically, we're actually going to be involved because we want to take the leverage of our brand, our people, our thinking, our innovative concepts, and make something better. So if you're going to do something, and I've always believed this implicitly, if you're going to do something, not only do it right, but invest in it and make it best in class. And I believe in that, and so does our company. And as a net result, those things matter to us.
And they really do. It's interesting switching gears too. You're an entrepreneur, and a lot of people, they dream about working in sports. And unfortunately, you know, I'm from San Diego, and I always said, you know, I dreamed about being the general manager of the Padres or whatever. Yeah. But then I realized as I came in to be CEO of Lee Steinberg that there are so many jobs in sports, but you have to be an entrepreneur. You have to sacrifice. You have to leave your point of entry open, move all over the world, change companies back and forth in order to learn enough to be in one of the best positions in the world, which, you know, is CEO of a large company, but you need to be entrepreneurial to become the CEO of TaylorMade.
Yeah.
Tell us about that journey of some of the philosophies that you have or advice for entrepreneurs, whether it's within the context of being, you know, I joke around, one of the best jobs that I found in sports was there was a sales job for Scott's Lawn Care. And it was a six-figure job, and you manage millions of dollars of budget to buy advertising on ESPN, go to all these killer events with your dealers. And I'm thinking, all these kids are working for nothing for the Cubs. Mm-hmm. And they've missed this unbelievable opportunity to travel the world and party in sports.
Yeah.
Tell me that journey.
Yeah. You know, I've been very fortunate for the better part of 20, going on 25 years, to have my career in sport, and particularly golf. And, you know, my father, who's a PhD in physics, a real rocket scientist. I grew up in a very different family. My father's my father's a PhD in physics, working for NASA, solving the reentry theory. My mother's a psychologist, and what was spawned from that is a golf club salesman. Go figure.
And you broke the Jewish tradition of doctor, lawyer, or failure.
There you have it. Yeah, and I'm in golf. You know, go figure all of that. But one thing my father instilled in me beyond a work ethic that, you know, I take very seriously. I mean, like any entrepreneur, if you want to be successful, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're an employee of an entrepreneurial company, if you're not working your tail off, you're not going to get that far. I can promise you that. You know, smarts is one thing. Capability is another thing. Work ethic is something very different. And the best leaders, the best entrepreneurs that I've seen around the world, and I've seen quite a few of them, are the hardest workers on top of some of the best thinkers. But my career has taken a series of pathways. But what my father used to say to me when I was a kid was, hey, if you can make your passion your vocation, you'll wake up every day and you'll be inspired to do the work that you want to do. So when I think about entrepreneurs on the other side of this interview, make your passion your vocation. It's not just about an idea, but are you all in? Are you all in emotionally? Are you all in physically? Is it something you want to do? Do you believe you can make a difference? And if you can do that, you have a better chance of succeeding because you're going to love what you do every day. And trust me, you're going to have some ups and downs, right? I haven't succeeded for 25 years. I've had a lot of good starts and I've had a lot of failures as well. But really, I know it sounds cliche. They're not really failures if you actually learn something from
miracles.
It and you apply it moving forward. Yeah, so maybe it's not a failure. Maybe it's a miracle. But my dream, and not everybody has the luxury of having a clear vision for what they wanted to be. My dream always had been to run TaylorMade Golf. I grew up playing competitive golf. I grew up in a suburban home in Connecticut where TaylorMade, when I was in high school, in the late 80s, early 90s, was running an ad campaign called The Art of Golf. I was paying bills through school on my way to university. I pulled down one of these ad campaign banners from a golf shop I was working in, and I put it up in my bedroom, which it still hangs there today. I've been out of the house for 25 years, lived all over the world, you know, cut my teeth not only in New York City working for TaylorMade, but worked in Hong Kong, you know, left the company twice. I joke with our head of human resources, every time we onboard a new employee to the company, right? Yeah. As an entrepreneurial type of company with a great innovative fiber, the onboarding process we take very seriously. And so everybody gets an orientation. Well, I've been gone twice and back three times. Three first days, I've only had one orientation. So if she's listening right now, you owe me two orientations.
That's right.
But in the end, I had to make a lot of personal sacrifices and professional sacrifices to be able to work my way into this job. And I don't take this job for granted. There isn't a second of my day that I'm not reinvesting my time and energy in learning better practices for the company, most importantly, our people and our customers and golfers. And that's what I wake up every day willing to do. And if you're not willing to do that, the likelihood of success is not as strong if otherwise. So it's a commitment. And every entrepreneur knows that. You've got to commit, be fully committed, believe in it, and see it all the way through.
Which is the energy of TaylorMade, right? Yeah. Someone taking, I love when I hear, you know, I have a guy that started one of the fastest growing franchises, and he lived in his car. He worked, didn't know golf, but he worked for a country club to save his tips as a right without going golf and getting to know, being more interested than interesting, like you said, the work ethic, so he could save $15,000 for his dream.
Yeah.
Those are the stories. But what a lot of people don't know too, entrepreneurial wise, and we've been blessed to have these executive jobs of really large, well-known, notable companies, is the sacrifice that occurs when you make it, right? We always talk about the beginning. Well, you know, I've, in my life, multimillionaire, lost it all, multimillionaire. And the scariest times for me was not when I had nothing, right? For me, because I'm hard work at you, same kind of background as you, mom's in education, there's just no quit in me.
Right.
But where I find most people don't understand the sacrifice is where you're at now. Mm-hmm. When you're the CEO of such a large organization, you have three young boys who are the most important thing to you, your family, because I know that's the most important, besides my health. Mm-hmm. And that's the sacrifice that people don't understand. You got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of your family and be there for them. But you have another family that you're responsible for all those jobs. What's that sacrifice like when you make it? We don't really talk about that.
Yeah. First of all, it's an honor to have that responsibility, which is something I take very seriously. But I live with a paranoia about complacency. I do, because I just know in the world today that if you're not moving forward, if you're not making stronger and better decisions around your products, your company, your people, you have a susceptibility to be vulnerable. And believe me, we have a lot of vulnerabilities. Every company does. But I literally live with a paranoia about ensuring that there is no complacency, not only in my role because I live that way, but through the organization. And that's what's really, in some regards, you know, driven us forward. We have a group of people that are inspired to make a difference every day and improve upon what they did the day before. And then we have to create an environment that enables all of our people at every level of the organization to have an opportunity to make a contribution to the company and be willing to bring good ideas forward so that we can continue to advance the company. But yes, I have two primary responsibilities in my life, my family and my professional family. And in many regards, if you were to ask my wife, Melody, at times those things kind of cross over with each other because my family, my personal family, my wife and three kids, they're as much part of TaylorMade as the TaylorMade employees are as much part of my family. And so it's one of the really unique things at TaylorMade, which is we are a very family-oriented organization. We have 1,200 people around the world. I make it a point that every one of those 1,200 at some point in time have an opportunity to interact with me or members of our executive team. I am on the road making the right sacrifices, sacrifices that I love making to engage our people because I love our people. I genuinely love our people. The greatest differentiator at our company really isn't the new driver or the new wedge, putter, or golf ball. It's the people that thought of that wedge, putter, and golf ball or new driver. It's the people that market that. It's the people that build it. It's the people that service it. It's the people that account for it. And we have the greatest culture in the world, and it's something I take very seriously. There's a family orientation to it, so 1,200 people, and everybody should know everybody. In fact, one of our core principles in our organization is the theory of connectivity, to be the most connected golf company in the world. So that's interesting, right? Because connectivity is both internal with each other as employees, knowing each other personally, how we work. We do a lot of work through human resources on what we call work modeling, which is personality profiling, so that you and I, Dave, really understand how we can be most productive together and understand our personal and professional needs so that we can advance what we're trying to get done underneath a very clear mission, which we talked about, in a clear set of guiding principles strategically for the company. So it syncs up and we work together. But believe me, I'd be lying to you if I didn't say, I miss my kids. Right. I'm on the road 120 to 140 nights a year. And so fortunately, I use technology to stay connected to my boys. I turn 7-day trips into 5-day trips. I'm sure that, you know, you can recall that. 5-day trips into 3-day trips. But I would never compromise my one-on-one time with my family, nor would I when I'm in front of our people. And that's where great leaders, in my opinion, either really succeed or don't succeed. You have to be present in every relationship that matters. And you need to identify which relationships matter. And for me, it's my wife, it's my kids, it's my family, and it's my company. And so that's what I focus on, and it serves us fairly well.
One thing I noticed when I met you today is that you didn't have PR people. A lot of times they go into companies, no names, but it's all about, oh my God, so-and-so is amazing. Like, everyone's pumping you up. It was the exact opposite. I got in here, you had listed out 4 different people as the world's best at what they did. You were the PR agent for your employees. I would say employees do 2 things. Number one, they watch you, just like kids. You can't tell your kids what to do. Yours are gonna be teenagers soon, but they watch you, which is the most powerful. Your employees watch you. And then 2, just straight appreciation, gratitude. And you display that more than any other CEO that I met for the first time. It just came across to me, you know, you're a mensch to your employees. You walk in and I was like, I've never seen a CEO pump up all 4 of his employees that are sitting in a truck in the parking lot at the Masters. But going forward, you know, what for you is the most important thing for your legacy? The last question, you know, you've done so much, and with this innovation internally, externally, what legacy do you want to leave?
Yeah, you know, I think the easy answer is, how do we build a lasting company that enables employees to develop professionally, to step into roles like mine over time, or roles that you see downstairs in the truck, and continue to have conversations with great people like yourselves, and talk and promote their company with great pride and ambition about its future. It's ironic, you know, I'm not at a place in my career at this point in time where I think a whole lot about my legacy, but I do spend a lot of time thinking about how we can ensure that the next 40 years for TaylorMade are equally as impressive as the previous 40, and that we have the right cultural fabric to enable our organization to do the work of today, but also plan for tomorrow. And as a net result, I think we're gonna be just fine. So I really don't spend a whole lot of time on personal legacy. I'm not going to suggest it's not important to me, but it's not important to me now. It's important to me now to ensure that I put the right fundamentals in place in our organization, so that whether I continue to lead over the next decade, which I hope I can stay at TaylorMade as long as I can, as long as I can create value and add value to the company. The day that I can't is the day somebody else needs to come in and be able to do that. Trust me, I hope that's not for a long time. I've got a lot of gas in the tank, and you know, I'm still in my mid-40s, so I've got a long way to go. But really, some of the work that I do every day that I am very thoughtful about is, how do I leave the future in a better place than where we are today? And that's just part of who I am. It's part of who we are as a company, and it's part of what your entrepreneurs should be thinking about as they get started, as they find traction, stability, generate profit, and then ultimately plan for something even bigger in the future as it relates to their company. And the one thing I would share with you, and share with everybody that is listening to this or reading this, is that you really need to take investment in people as your number one priority. You're only gonna be as good as the team around you and the environment you create for them. And while many people may say that, many people may try to model that, you have to live that. And if you don't live that, the likelihood of succeeding at this level is gonna be a bit more challenged than otherwise.
You know what, the last guy I talked to that said that was Tom Brady. Who's a pretty darn good quarterback.
Yeah, he's okay. he's okay. Well, and I think he's playing TaylorMade. He should be.
Yeah.
So, Tom, if you're listening, we got a new driver on the way to you.
He's here, so hopefully we'll get him by the truck.
Yeah, I hope so.
So, we're going to see him later. David Abeles, unbelievable quarterback of TaylorMade. It's just been a pleasure.
Thank you
for already starting, leaving, and showing people what it's truly like to be a successful entrepreneur of service. Not only to your community, the golf community, but also your employees. So thank you.
I appreciate your time too. Thanks, Vincent. Okay.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.